On this episode of Post Game Shake, we welcome on Colin Blackwell to talk about everything from his battle with concussions to playing in his first NHL game with the Nashville Predators.
Welcome back to Post Game Shake episode 18. We've got a great show for you today. Before we talk about that, Muzz, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. We got a good episode for you guys coming up, so I'm excited. Kid I got to play with for a little bit of time, and now seeing him succeed is really cool. So me and Timmy had a lot of fun interviewing him. Timmy,
by episode, we mean interview.
Did I say that again, dude? What's my deal?
I don't know. I didn't mean to, I just meant our episode is just the interview today. So
yeah, true.
Enjoy it.
Well, it is. That is. So that maybe that's why I was thinking our interview is the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Vice versa.
And vice versa.
What were you going to ask?
No, I was just going to ask what's going on. How's life?
Life's good, man. But, work's a little busier than it has been in the past. So, you know, getting away to do this is always fun. So,
yep. It's a nice midweek break for us, and it gives us a little excitement. And obviously we've got some awesome people on, so it makes it that much more enjoyable.
I'll tell you what, man, it's freaking cold outside. There's like 18 degrees and windy, and I'm outside and I'm like, oh my God, I cannot wait for July.
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm going to the Bahamas in T-minus like 29 days or something.
Yeah. So you're not counting down at all.
No. I just have that biological clock ticking, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You have like the little thing on your computer at work. 28 days till the Bahamas.
28 days, 12 hours, 9 minutes and 34 seconds. Yeah.
Yeah. Classic.
But who's counting? All right, cool. Yeah. Let's get right into it. Let's kick it over to the Colin Blackwell interview.
Enjoy it.
Here with us today on the podcast, we have a Lawrence, Mass native. He was a 2011 San Jose Sharks draft pick, went on to play college hockey at Harvard. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's a pretty good school. And started his pro career 3 years ago. He just recently made his NHL debut with the Nashville Predators. Great hockey player, better kid. Welcome to the podcast, Colin Blackwell.
Thanks for having me, boys. I appreciate it.
Pumped no worries. What's going on, man?
Not too much. Just got back from a 14-day road trip, so it's good to be back in my own house for a little while.
Nice, dude.
Well, yeah, where'd that 14-day road trip take you?
We were in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Cleveland, and then we made her down to Texas. We were in Austin and San Antonio for a little bit, so it was a little bit of a minus 15 in Winnipeg and then 70 degrees in Texas, so a little bit of a swing there, but it's good to be back.
Dude, I can't believe they had you guys all over the map like that in one road trip. Or did you tag, you come back and then go, or was it all?
No, one road trip. So far, our travel's been pretty good this year. It hasn't been too bad, but there's always, I think every team commits to like a, you know, 2 week road trip at some point in the AHL season. And it's just one of those things where I guess that's, I'm not sure if that's how they wrote it up, but it wasn't as bad as you think it is. We had a couple of days off here and there, got to spend some time in some pretty cool cities. So it worked out well.
Nice, dude. Yeah. Any time in Texas this time of year is solid.
Yeah. Yep.
How'd it go? You guys have a good trip, or was it, I saw you guys had a big win last night.
Yeah, the last like three games have been going well for us, but the month of February we struggled a little bit. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, we're losing some tight games that we maybe should have won, but you know, we're in this playoff hunt right now. I think the out of eight teams, or I guess seeds 4 through 8 in our division, the top four make the playoffs. I think we're sitting in fifth or sixth right now, depending on how games went tonight and last night. But seeds 4 through 6 are basically a game apart from one another. So we got, you know, five teams basically, seeds, 4 through 8, excuse me, fighting for this playoff spot. So it's pretty tight. And you know, the last three games, we've been playing pretty well. So we're in this hunt for the next, you know, 16, 17 games. It's going to be fun.
Nice, man. Crunch time is best time of year.
Absolutely.
Good stuff.
So let's take it back a little. We're eventually going to get to present day playing from Milwaukee and the whole playoff run now. But let's rewind it back to your youth hockey days and being from Mass. You kind of had a lot of choices of playing different youth programs and prep schools or junior route, but you chose St. John's Prep. So why the choice for St. John's, and just a little bit about the experience there and how much you enjoyed it.
Yeah, actually, the prep was probably one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. It was just kind of one of those situations where, you know, I was interested in going to prep school. My talking to my parents, and we kind of agreed that it was probably the best for me based on, you know, what I wanted to do, play, you know, whether it was college hockey or college lacrosse at the time. And kind of the new trend at that time, 2008, was, you know, repeating at some point. And my dad obviously gave me an opportunity to go to, you know, what I was originally looking at the prep, Governor's Academy, and Phillips Andover. And basically the original plan was to, you know, go to North Andover High School or St. John's Prep for a year and then possibly repeat. You know, my freshman year, and I end up going to the prep and kind of falling in love with it and making a great group of friends, and you know, with lacrosse and hockey going well, I ended up really enjoying it and succeeding and staying for 4 years.
Nice. I didn't realize you were a big lacrosse guy.
Yeah, kind of growing up, I always liked hockey way more than lacrosse, but lacrosse was kind of my second sport, and I definitely had a love for it. And there's actually some funny fast forward a couple of years at Harvard. There's a, you know, opportunity where I almost played on the Harvard lacrosse team. Some people got hurt and had to take a year off from school. So they needed some bodies, but it didn't end up working out.
No way, man. So you were good. I'm not surprised. You're a good athlete. Like, it's not a surprise at all, but.
Yeah, I mean, lacrosse is a really good transition from hockey. It's very similar. And, you know, it was always good growing up. He can't play hockey, you know, all year round. I think nowadays some people are just getting burnt out, and I almost did too. And hockey or lacrosse was that kind of like second calling, kind of get away from it a little bit. And, you know, taking the spring off and some summers too, it's, you know, I enjoyed watching my brother growing up. He was an awesome lacrosse player, played college lacrosse at Bentley, and that was kind of where I fell in love with it.
Yeah, you kind of need that break. Like, I feel like it's changed a lot over time, but like our parents are playing like 3-4 sports in high school, and even sometimes they're playing a lot of sports in college. And then, you know, for us, it was like I needed like that summer. For me, it was baseball. For you, lacrosse. Or for Muzz, it was baseball too. Like, you kind of need that little break to almost get your love back for hockey once like the end of summer, kind of fall hits.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even now I recognize it. I mean, playing college hockey and stuff, you play, I think in the Ivy League, we played, you know, 34 games a year. And now I'm playing 76 plus playoffs plus preseason and kind of the grind. And it's a long year, and hockey's a long sport. And, you know, one thing I do notice just in the summer when I go back and play different sports, like the fact that I've stopped playing lacrosse and some other stuff, like I feel like I've gotten less athletic as the years have gone on. Stop playing multiple sports, but definitely gives you a break when you're growing up, just, you know, breaking down the seasons.
So do you follow Hey Barber on Instagram?
Yep.
So he talks about the he loves talking about a bunch of stuff, but the lacrosse style goal and how there hasn't been one yet in the NHL.
Yeah.
Maybe that's like your thing, man. I bet you could get that down easy.
I don't know if I have the hands for that anymore.
But hey, man, if you could make a name for yourself doing scoring one of those goals in the NHL, be the first guy, I think you'd be set.
I think I'm just more focused on kind of getting in the lineup than
goal. I was gonna say, or just like, right, scoring, yeah, like a nice one timer, making a nice pass. Yeah. Other than that, though, focus right, on the lacrosse style goal for sure.
Yeah. I'm jumping the gun. Yeah. Sorry. Just a thought, though. Keep it in mind.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, hockey was always a big thing for you. You were pretty well known in high school, and then obviously going to Harvard, and we'll get there. But was it ever a decision that you were like, man, I might want to focus on lacrosse and not do hockey, or was hockey kind of always your go-to?
More hockey was always my go-to. My dad kind of basically told me when I was in eighth grade, you got to choose one or the other to kind of focus on. Doesn't mean you can't play both, but, you know, from like a college recruiting aspect, it's tough to, you know, be going to these lacrosse tournaments in the summer along with the hockey recruiting showcases and all that stuff. So kind of around eighth grade, that's when I, going into my freshman year, that's when I, you know, knew I wanted to play hockey and chose hockey and, you know, and ended up working out.
Nice. Yeah. So was it at St. John's Prep then? So that you were drafted in 2011. Was that your senior year, or was the draft the year after that for you?
That was my senior year.
Okay. So take us through that too, because that's a pretty crazy experience. And before you get started, like, we talked to Timmy Harrison. Do you know Timmy at all? Played at Colgate.
Yeah, of course.
Good. So we had him on a couple weeks ago, and we were talking to him about his draft experience and how he was eating a bowl of ice cream while he was watching his name come across the screen. Like, couldn't believe it, that kind of thing. So obviously everybody has a different experience, especially like a little bit of a later round guy. I mean, you're only five off from that 199 Tom Brady chip on your shoulder type deal. But just take us through, like, what was it like to get drafted and what was the day like for you?
Yeah, to be honest with you, like, I wasn't even thinking about the draft or anything. Like, nowadays kids finish their high school hockey season or anything along those lines, and, you know, they start preparing for the combine and stuff. And I was honestly kind of shocked that it ended up happening, because throughout the course of the spring and towards the end of the winter and my senior year, I think I only spoke to like two NHL teams on the phone. And I ended up meeting with the head, Tim Burke of the San Jose Sharks. He's the head of scouting and player development there. And I met with him at like Panera Bread in North Andover, and just to do like a little interview. And that was really the only team. And he basically said to me, you know, listen, we don't have a seventh round pick right now. That's probably where you're going to fall. But, you know, we're interested in you. Obviously during during this time period, a lot of trades are made and we might acquire one. And if we do get one, we'd be interested in taking you. And that was really kind of the only person that in talking to, I felt that I really had a lot of, you know, they had a lot of interest in me. And, you know, so the whole spring I was playing lacrosse. I wasn't even playing hockey or working out or kind of doing anything. I was playing my senior year lacrosse, and it wasn't until I think it happens in June. We had just finished lacrosse season, and I was getting ready to go to like a summer concert, and I just happened to be like, you know what, I'll check in on the seventh round. And I refreshed like NHL.com and I saw my name there, and I was like, is this a sick joke? Like, I had to like refresh it a couple more times, and then I got a call from Tim Burke and said, he basically was like, yeah, I told you not to get your hopes up, but we made a trade, and you know, I think you're going to be a good part of this organization. And you know, I kind of went to a concert, and
that must have been a good night, man.
Yeah, seriously. Who are you seeing?
I don't know if I want to admit to it right now.
No, you got to tell us.
No, I was with my girlfriend at the time. We went to a Taylor Swift concert.
Oh, dude. Oh! I love T Swift. Yeah, own that, man.
Yeah.
Classic.
You can own that only because you got drafted. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
Somebody comes up to you, they're like, why are you at a T Swift concert? It's like, why didn't you get drafted today like I did?
Yeah. Take it easy, man. So, I mean, not a huge surprise, only because that was the team that had the only team that had actually spoken to you. But, I mean, you had pretty much put it out of your mind that you weren't going to get drafted. You kind of shared that experience, but like, what did Tim Burke say to you that made you maybe have a sense in your mind, like that the Sharks wanted you and why they liked you as a player? Like, did he tell you anything specific, or was just like kind of vague, like we like you as a player, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, there was nothing really specific. I actually knew he kind of liked me based on, I had a couple conversations on the phone with some other scouts, and when I met with Berkey, it was pretty intense, to be honest with you. He basically, you know, put me on the spot and asked me what my, you know, strengths and weaknesses were. And like I said, I wasn't really preparing for this. So I some guys might, you know, prepare for these kind of interviews, and I was pretty straightforward with him what I thought. And he basically said, you know, I'm 100% wrong, and told me what I was, you know, what my strengths and what my weaknesses are, and this is how I'm gonna, you know, get to the next level and stuff like that. And I remember leaving that conversation with him being like, it was kind of a reality check, to be honest with you. And it kind of made me a little bit more, you know, hungry that summer going into my freshman year of college. And then obviously getting a call from him, you know, I think it was a month later, or 2 months later, or whatever it was at the draft. So I usually, when people are hard on you, that I've always learned that, you know, maybe they like you a little bit more, but I don't think there was anything too specific, but it was just that I had a couple conversations with him, and, you know, everything went pretty well.
Dude, that's sick. I mean, I can't imagine getting that phone call or anything along that lines. Do you remember what the deal was that they ended up making so that they ended up with that seventh round pick?
I don't know what the deal was, but to be honest with you, for a while, it's changed every single year, but there's like a, basically, a history of how, I mean, there's been so many trades throughout the NHL history, but for a certain period of time, I think for 2 or 3 years, I lived in Voorhees, New Jersey, right outside of Philadelphia, where the Flyers practice rink is. And a couple of my neighbors are in the extended neighborhood where Flyers, you know, young players. And Eric Lindros used to come pick him up for practice a lot. It was this guy, Chris Gratton. He was a heavyweight fighter. I remember I used to not even be playing hockey back then, and I would just be out in the driveway when Eric Lindros would pull up in his Mercedes and pick up Chris Gratton. I'd just be staring at him like, who are these people? And for that year, 2011 to 2000, to the next year, 2012, I was like the very last piece to the huge Eric Lindros trade when he decided he didn't want to play in for Quebec. And I was like the last piece to the puzzle. So if you went down
that's crazy.
To it was like
that's
Eric,
so cool,
Eric Lindros for Colin Blackwell.
Yeah. That's how it works out. Absolutely.
And now every single year, like those draft picks that have continued to be traded since then, it still like basically changes and it gets extended every single year. But that's kind of for a little while, that was my claim to fame.
Dude, I don't blame you.
That's sick, man. That's so cool. It's funny how everything kind of like comes around 180. Go ahead, Timmy.
Absolutely, yeah. So Harvard, we kind of mentioned it. You know, why Harvard besides the obvious, like, you know, duh, it's Harvard. If you had a chance to go there, you'd probably go there. But I mean, did you have any other choices to go to other schools, and what was the main selling point on Harvard?
Yeah, no, I definitely I had some other opportunities to go to some other schools, looking at some, you know, Ivy League schools and Hockey East schools. And, you know, one of the things was obviously playing close to home in Boston. You get to play in the Beanpot. But I think the one thing that sold me, I was talking to Teddy Donato, and he said to me, you know, what happens if, you know, you get a career-ending injury, and what school do you want to be at if hockey is no longer in the picture? And that was Harvard. And I kind of thought about that after leaving, you know, talking to him one of those days, and he might have almost jinxed me at some point where I almost took a couple of years off.
Yeah.
But,
seriously.
But, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. Obviously Harvard has a pretty wild history, not only hockey wise, but, from an academic standpoint. And I just thought it was, you know, kill two birds with one stone, and you have that opportunity to kind of use hockey to kind of get you into the school, then you know, I figured I would give it a shot. And obviously my parents wanted that too, and I can't tell you how many times I you know, studied and basically took the SAT to get in there. But
what'd you get on the SATs? You don't have to tell us if you don't want to.
I honestly don't remember.
But we want to know. So,
well, you don't have to tell us, but if you don't tell us right now, we're going to cut you off.
Yeah. It's okay. I'm sure you did pretty well.
So, I mean, Beanpot, Boston, I mean, just like the history, but I want to know a little bit more about like the academics, like what were classes like? Was the academics like tough to where you were studying kind of your ass off, or was it more laid back in the sense of like, once you're kind of in, it's almost like I've heard it's like once you're in, I won't say a bubble, but like, you know, you kind of help each other out and the professors are kind of there almost more as networking opportunities. And you obviously learn a lot. Like, I just kind of want to hear about the academic, you know, realm there a little bit.
Yeah. It was a pretty unique experience. I think a lot of people always say like the hardest part is getting in. And I definitely think that might be true, but I think college in general, no matter where you go, it's kind of what you put into it, you're going to get out. And, you know, there's, yeah, so many different kind of avenues that you can take. I ended up, you know, my first 2 years, I studied economics, and I ended up getting a major in basically political science. They called it government there, and then a minor in psychology. I ended up switching routes kind of like halfway through. But yeah, it was like it was pretty cool. It's no different than probably Babson, where you have like a huge lecture, and then you basically meet in smaller groups, like sections throughout the week. But yeah, I remember I took so many different classes there, stuff that was, you know, pretty easy, but then some stuff that I really struggled with. And, you know, not only the athletes there, but everybody there was, there's always a lot of, somebody there to, you know, lend a helping hand or whenever I needed it type of thing. So even though at some points I did well, and some points I struggled, I think that's just college in general, no matter where you go.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, dude, I don't understand, like, is it different for Harvard because, like, Harvard's such a good school. Do you get treated like a BC hockey player gets treated at BC, or are you going into class and, like, you better get to class and you better do your homework, like that kind of thing?
Yeah, we are not getting treated like BC hockey players.
Yeah, which is funny because you guys are, I mean, on the same level, like, especially these last, you know, the last decade or so, Harvard and BC are, like, pretty neck and neck.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't really know how to describe it, but I think there's definitely – Harvard's just, like, a weird it's like, I don't know how to say it, like, a unique there are some people that love sports there, and then there are some people that kind of want nothing to do with sports. And obviously some people might get rubbed the wrong way that, you know, there might be some athletes that got in there and maybe they're not the sharpest tool in the shed. But, but you know, for the most part, like I said, like anytime I needed help with anything, there was always somebody, you know, somebody there, whether it was a professor, you know, other students, whatever, there's a huge network there just of help. It's just that you gotta kind of go out there and kind of put yourself out there in order to kind of get the help.
Yeah, I think Babson's probably pretty similar to Harvard in the sense that it's I don't know, Harvard's probably what, 5 or 10,000?
I want to say it's like 1,800 a class, so less than.
Okay, that makes sense. So, but Babson's like 2,000 total. And it's, you know, half those people, it's a lot of international kids that like that want nothing to do with sports.
And
like, I mean, you guys, like, great rink, like, you guys, I'm sure get a pretty good crowd. We got an awful crowd for the most part. No offense to anybody that came to the games, but I was thinking more in terms of like the beanpot, like when you get, first of all, must have been unbelievable. I want to hear what that experience is like. But for you guys, it's a little different of a fan, like a, you know what I mean? The support's not as much there as it is with the other teams.
No, definitely not. I think I remember, and it's just one of those things where you kind of just, at first, I think I was kind of rattled about it, but I remember my first year and we were like, they have all the freshmen like go in the dining hall and sell people like bean pot tickets and people have no idea. Like,
what's like, the bean pot?
Yeah, what is the bean pot? And I would just sit there like, are you kidding? Like, I would just be like, and like, here I am, like, you know, this kid grew up watching it as a little kid and like people at some point didn't even know like where the hockey rink was like on campus. But, you know, I think my first year that I got there, the team had struggled a little bit in years prior. And then by the time I left and the year after I left, they went to the Frozen Four and won the bean pot. And I think kind of that basically on campus atmosphere, a lot of people by the time I liked how I saw it grew from when I was a freshman to when I left there, how many more people started coming to the games. And I still think they can, you know, do a little bit better job at doing it. But, you know, the student body started getting more people in the fan section. The big games were sold out against the Cornell, the Yale, stuff like that. So, from that standpoint, it was just to see, kind of be a part of that first original class that was there that kind of saw it from the bottom and then saw it work its way up. It was pretty cool.
Absolutely. So you got growing up watching the bean pot every single year, knowing how special that, you know, those two Mondays are. Talk about your experience playing the bean pot, just, you know, what it was like and kind of some of the games. And just at one point, I'm sure you were kind of either on the ice for warmups or before a face off or on the bench sitting there being like, wow, I'm playing at the Garden in the bean pot. This is pretty special.
Yeah, it was sick, but it sucked at the same time. I didn't get to go to a single bean pot championship game. That was like my biggest regret from college. My first year playing it, that was probably one of the best ones. I think we played BU, and that's when they had Nieto and some of these other studs, and they were highly ranked. And I think we pushed it to 2-1. It was my 2-1, and then they scored an empty netter. I think we lost 3-1, but it was a pretty close game. And I remember just, you know, when you play in that first game, like the atmosphere in the beginning, playing at 4:30, everybody's kind of getting out of work. Like you said, like Harvard maybe didn't have the same exact fans as the BU BU section or whatnot. But then when people start coming in the second and the third period of that first game for the second game, you know, you're playing in a pretty close, it's close to a sellout crowd in the TD Garden. It was like something that you kind of dream about as a kid as you're watching it. And then, you know, you get a chance the next year. I think that was a year that we struggled as a team, and the Beanpot we played. You know, that line of Johnny Gaudreau, Kevin Hayes, and Bill Arnold, and, you know, they basically took control of college hockey that year. And then, you know, I missed the next 2 years and got a chance to play the fifth year that I was there. I honestly, who was that against? I think that was against BC that year. We lost to them. And they had, I think, 8 first round draft picks with Tuck and all those kids that, you know, are doing really well in the NHL now. Michael Matheson, you know.
That team was sick.
Yeah, it was sick. We ended up playing against them in the first round of the NCAA tournament too. And, you know, they were all pretty close games for the most part. But, you know, they got the edge of us in, you know, 2 of the most important ones. But just to be able to play in the Beanpot is something that you grow up watching as a kid. I mean, to be honest with you, it was pretty sick watching up and looking up, and you can see your parents up there in the stands. And when you're watching on Nesson as a kid, you don't really, it takes a little while for you for it to sink in and just to be like, wow, like I'm here, you know, a lot can change. And, you know, when I was a freshman in high school, I would never have thought that I was, you know, going to be playing in the Beanpot or college hockey, never mind. I mean, I think I was 5'3", 130 pounds. So, I mean, it's just like one of those things where you take 4 years and just kind of put it in perspective. It's pretty wild.
Yeah, absolutely. Dude. So you've alluded to the missing a lot, like a lot of your, I don't know how you want to call it, your junior and technically senior year, but then coming back for a fifth year. Talk kind of about the concussion issues, because I remember before I met you, I knew about you. I remember you being a stud at St. John's Prep, and then the other thing was like this kid is like such a good hockey player, but can't stay on the ice because of concussions. And I actually thought I heard at one point that you might've been hanging him up. So yeah, kind of no, just like, what was the deal with all that?
Yeah. To be honest with you, I can't tell you how many times I've basically had conversations with myself where I was, you know, ready to call it quits, but I don't know what it is about this game that I just, you know, I felt like I had more to give and I just wanted to give it like, you know, one more chance or whatever it was, but I just couldn't, you know, come to grips with, you know, officially calling it quits. But yeah, I kind of unfortunately had a little bit of a, you know, bad experience kind of when I was in my, I think it was my junior, or I guess my first one happened my sophomore year. I ended up getting a concussion and then ended up getting coming back and then getting a second one later on that year. And then I ended up having just kind of, you know, symptoms of that concussion for the next, you know, 18 months or so, kind of on and off. And it was just kind of one of those things that I felt like I couldn't really shake it. And yeah, it sucked to be honest with you. It's just kind of one of those things where it's an invisible injury that, you know, to the outside world, you know, some people might think that you're okay or something along those lines. It's not like you have a cast on your arm or your leg or something along those lines, and there's no real timetable to come back. So, I mean, it's just kind of one of those things where I never had one before, so I was never really prepared for it. And then to kind of go into that experience in a college setting where you got the social, the academic, and the hockey life kind of going into it, you know, I definitely struggled a little bit, but it wasn't until, you know, we tried a bunch of things and I found out that a lot of the stuff that I was feeling was stemming from, you know, maybe more of a neck injury than neurological injury. And then once I kind of got that figured out, you know, I was back on the ice shortly after and, you know, able to go on a little playoff run and then play my fifth year there, and it ended up working out pretty well.
So was that sounds a lot like the kind of injury that Sidney Crosby had, where it was very like concussion like symptoms. It stemmed from a concussion originally, I'm assuming, in both cases, and then it was kind of the neck problem. So how did you figure that out? Was it seeing a neurologist and kind of getting that whole thing, or was it your team doctor? Kind of how'd you figure that out?
No, it was kind of just off on my own, to be honest with you. I tried a lot of things, and you know, concussion research has been, you know, it's improved exponentially over the last you know, several years. But I was honestly alluding to the point that you said about to hang him up. I tried everything, was pretty frustrated and couldn't figure out, you know, some of the best, you know, concussion specialists that I went to go see, you know, couldn't really help me out. So I was pretty frustrated, kind of in like a, you know, a black hole where I just, you know, nothing was really working. And then it wasn't until one of my teammates at the time, Tommy O'Regan, I think you might know him. He had a concussion and said he went to, you know, this guy over at TB12 and, you know, he ended up having a lot of success with him. So I said, you know what, screw it. Why not? I'll go give it one more chance. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, then we'll probably hang him up. If not, then, you know, we'll go from there. And I end up developing a good relationship with the guy, Dave Mearson, over there. I still work with him today. He's one of the TB12 body coaches over there. And I've been going to him since 2012, 2013, just basically for workouts and, you know, maintenance stuff and everything across the board. And he's kind of like my right-hand man type of thing. And basically I went to go see him, did a little bit of what they call like a boot camp basically. And, you know, it was more neck related than anything. And I was back playing shortly after that.
So I got to ask the question now. So you went over to TB12. That's sick. Did you ever work out with Tom, or did you ever work out with like Alex Guerrero or any of those guys?
So I've never gotten a chance to see Tom in there. I have with Guerrero before. I've seen Giselle in there.
Nice.
And not a big deal. And then a lot of the Patriots and just basically a bunch of different athletes were going in there, especially in the early years. It was way smaller. It's a little bit bigger now. Every single time I was in there, you'd see a lot of the Patriots guys and whatnot. And I have seen a bunch of different people kind of rolling through there.
Is it ever since you started going there, have you had any more symptoms of it, or is it, you know, knock on wood, completely gone away since you went to that treatment?
Yeah, no, obviously everything's been pretty good to me so far. So I think that it's kind of one of those things now, if I ever do experience any of those things that I felt in the past, I kind of know what works for me and kind of, you know, basically one of those things where, you know, I've experienced it before. And so I know kind of, I'm pretty knowledgeable on the topic now, not only from like a neurological standpoint, but just basically the different, you know, muscles that affect different symptoms and stuff along those lines. So just kind of learning from them and just kind of understanding your own body and kind of what I've been through and what I've experienced. It's allowed me to, whether I'm home in the summers or, you know, I'm home for Christmas break or All-Star break, or even to, if I, you know, I'm kind of on the road or something along those lines, I can do some stuff on my own, and everything, you know, has been good since those days. So I knock on wood, it's been good, and hopefully it stays that way.
Nice, man. Yeah. So then talk about, Timmy, unless you want to talk anything else, Harvard, but
no, you know, go for it.
Harvard goes well for you, obviously, once you get back on the ice, and then San Jose comes knocking. Like, I know we talked about it a little bit, like, you know, a few years ago, but how did they come around? They're like, hey, you know, we still believe in you. We still want to give you a shot. I think you signed an AHL deal, right?
Yeah.
And then, what did they expect out of you? What was your, obviously you looked great in camp and all that stuff, but what were they kind of relaying to you, and what was that like?
I think, yeah, it was like kind of after that, I came back my senior year and played like basically 10 games in playoffs and did pretty well. And I remember going to development camp that summer, and basically at the end they were saying like, we kind of, this is originally,
oh, that's right, dude. This I is forgot originally, about that.
This is originally the game plan of when we were kind of expecting to sign you. Like, you looked really good and you had a really good development camp. Like, we're under the impression that you want to go back to school, and do you want to sign something? And I basically wasn't really expecting that. And I obviously we had some unfinished business to do back at school, but there were some kind of issues with me with eligibility and stuff that was up in the air. So it was definitely something that I wasn't really expecting, but I was, so I went back for my fifth year once I got all the eligibility stuff figured out. And then my last year at school, you know, I maybe didn't do as well as I think everybody across the board thought that I should have done. And I ended up signing an American League deal that year and played with, you for a little bit with the CUDA and had a really good year that just like good experience. Obviously we had a sick team that year. I went to the Western Conference Finals and probably should have gone a little bit farther. And you look at that team that I played for, you know, that first year pro, I can't tell you how many guys are playing in the NHL right now, whether
it's crazy. It's legit crazy.
Or part-time or full-time. I want to say this year alone, it's got to be 5 defensemen, a goalie, and at least 9 or 10 forwards from that team. Like, we were pretty stacked.
I'm looking at the roster now. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm looking at the roster now, and I didn't know that this many studs was on that AHL team in San Jose that year. Holy
yeah,
crap.
It was ridiculous. Like we our playoff roster for that run, I, you know, obviously everything happens and you know, the Sharks had bowed out early in the playoffs and we were still going. So we got some guys that were playing up with the NHL club and we thought we were going to make a huge run and we ran into a really good Grand Rapids team that year that kind of just outratted us. Basically, we're a pretty skilled team and they were a pretty gritty team and they, you know, took it to us in that last playoff series. But yeah, our team was pretty sick that year. And then just seeing some of the guys now, like there's a lot of guys that have moved on and there's a lot of guys that are still with the Sharks and doing really well.
Yeah, I mean, just for a couple, I mean, Timo Meier and Kevin LeBanc are two that are, you know, still with the Sharks and are, you know, absolutely crushing it right now. So
Sorensen too, right? And then like
Sorensen, yeah.
Barkley Goodrow.
Goody, yeah.
Ryan Carpenter plays on Vegas. Then you had like Daniel Regan was AHL Rookie of the Year. Rourke Chartier was he, you know, made the team out of camp this year, played in the NHL. And those were the centers that were ahead of me that
yeah, right.
First year. It was like Daniel Regan, it was, you know, Ryan Carpenter, it was, you know, Rourke Chartier. So we had so much depth and Nikolai Goldobin was there. He plays in Vancouver now.
Jesus. I mean, just you can just go on and on.
The team is a wagon. It's like the definition. Like that was,
yeah, I'm pretty sure we went on like, somebody beat it this year, but I want to say we went on some absolute heater in the middle of the year, like 14 game winning streak or like something like that. And it was like everything, every game was like, we knew we were going to win. Basically. It was one of those years.
Yeah, dude, I remember. So you – I feel like you didn't get, like – so how many games did you play? I think 57?
Yeah.
So
– sounds about right.
Yeah, I think you were, like – were you doing, like, third and fourth line type stuff?
Yeah,
and,
yeah. It was probably – it was – so I played majority on the fourth line that year. Got a couple chances here and there to play on the third line. But for the most part, you know, I kind of saw what my role was and basically I just tried to, you know, accept that role and hopefully, you know, get some more playing time. If anything were to happen, just kind of do my job and kind of put my head down and maybe I wasn't necessarily 100% happy with it, but it was what I knew was going to keep me in the lineup every single night. You know, I got hurt for, I think we only played 68 games and I missed probably 10, 11 plus games for that year. I just knew that was kind of going to be my role, kill some penalties and, you know, playing the fourth line, kind of be that energy guy. And I don't really think I got a chance because we had such a stacked lineup to kind of do what, you know, I knew I was capable of doing. And that's when kind of the following year when I ended up in Roch, like that was kind of my coming out and breaking out year where I was able to kind of show what I was capable of doing from, you know, an all around aspect.
Yeah. I was just going to get into that too. Cause I was going to say like, that's the definition of like having patience, seeing it out, being like, you know what, rookie year, kind of like rite of passage. And then you moved over to Rochester and you put up 45 points in like 60 games. I mean, obviously you had a great year. Like talk about what the transition was like. What did you like kind of find your game? How does, not that you weren't playing well in San Jose, but obviously that sophomore year was a big one for you.
Yeah, to be honest with you, last year, I mean, I'm looking at this time right now, March this year to basically the beginning of like training camp last year. It's crazy what happens in a year because after that year, obviously, even though I felt like I was a big piece to the San Jose puzzle and that playoff run and stuff like that, you know, like I said, like my stats weren't really there. I think I had, you know, a handful of goals, but not really that many points, but I was playing on, you know, not really necessarily like a scoring line. It wasn't necessarily my role. So going into last year, to be honest with you, people showed interest, but, you know, you combine not really producing that much with my injury history from college. You know, there was interest, but there wasn't anybody that was willing to commit to me. So it was kind of one of those things where all of a sudden September came around and I didn't have a job, and I thought I was going to be, you know, maybe looking to go overseas or play in the East Coast League. And I got a call from Buffalo saying that, you know, I was talking to my agent that I was like, I'm going to have to maybe play in the East Coast League in the beginning of the year and work my way up. And that was just something that I was, you know, willing and prepared to do. And even though I didn't think I, you know, deserved that, I was just kind of where it was. And that was the reality of it. And so I went to Buffalo. I got invited to their prospects rookie tournament. And I was one of the older guys there, and I went there and I did pretty well. So they invited me to their AHL training camp in Rochester. And kind of from there, the coaching staff was the same exact coaching staff in the rookie showcase thing. And that was kind of what saved me, to be honest with you. I got invited to their camp, and the coaches really liked me, and that's where I developed their trust for them kind of from day one. And it was kind of one of those things. They liked the way I played, and it was awesome for me because it was a new coaching staff in Roch, and it was an entirely new general management group. So they had no affiliation or no, you know, it was none of their draft picks. It was none of their players really. It was just basically a group of guys that they had no like affiliation with whatsoever. So it didn't matter whether you were a first round pick or, you know, somebody making an NHL one way salary, you're just kind of whoever's playing the best was going to get the opportunity. And like I said, I developed the trust from the coaches from that tournament in the preseason. And I signed a 25 game PTO with them with the understanding that if I continued what I was doing, that they would sign me for, you know, a contract for the rest of the year. And, you know, the first five games I was playing on the fourth line, kind of doing the same role as I was the previous year, killing penalties. And then somebody got called up or somebody got hurt. And then I got put in some pretty good situations, and I kind of rolled with it for the rest of the year. And, you know, that team this year is pretty stacked. And last year is a lot of the same players, and it didn't matter whether you were playing, you know, forward 1 through 10 were NHL caliber forwards, kind of like the previous year in San Jose. So, you know, I got a chance to play with some really good players, and, you know, I ended up working out for me really well.
It's crazy how, like, you go from not being able to, get past your injury concerns to playing on a stacked team in San Jose and then, like, still being on the cusp, and then all it takes is a new coaching staff or a new organization and just, you know, one opportunity with injury, and then you just kind of be able to just showcase what you're able to do. It's crazy how, like, it's an opportunity like that can wield some confidence, and then also just, you know, for you being able to kind of get in the role that you feel like you're more fit for, and then you're obviously going to succeed.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think confidence is pretty, that's one thing I've learned. Confidence is pretty much everything. You get the, you know, whether it's one person, a scout or a coach or, you know, general manager to kind of, you never know who's watching, especially in the AHL. And I think that's one thing that helped me for this year. And also, you know, the general manager, of Nashville and Milwaukee, he is a Rochester native, and, you know, I had no idea, but the whole time he was out scouting last year at a lot of Rochester's games. So it's kind of one of those things where you never know who's watching, especially in the AHL. There's, you know, especially the last like month has been pretty wild, especially for our organization with the trade deadline and stuff. And there's just so many people at games all the time, and you never know who's watching, and you have one game and somebody sees one thing that they like, and, you know, it goes a long way.
Yeah. So, dude, talking like elephant in the room, like first NHL game, talk about signing with Nashville and then kind of how that whole thing rolled, and all of a sudden you're playing six games in the NHL, like 2 years after, or, you know, 3 years after you almost hung up the skates with concussion issues. It's just crazy what, you know, like we kind of talked about it, what happens in a short amount of time and, you know, how it came about.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's kind of been the story of like my hockey career so far, is just kind of ups and downs and peaks and valleys. But, you know, this year I went into camp and I was the last cut of, I almost made, you know, Nashville's team out of camp, and obviously they're pretty stacked. And it was kind of one of those things that I was one of the last people cut before they made the 23-man roster. And I went down to Milwaukee, and, you know, I had, you know, set myself up for, you know, a pretty good opportunity that if I played well, then maybe I get a chance to get called up. And at that point, I still wasn't really thinking about it. But it was kind of one of those things. In the first AHL game, I, you know, dislocated my shoulder. So I missed a month plus in the beginning of the season. And then all of a sudden I came back, you know, played a handful of games, was just kind of getting into the swing of things. And, you know, another fluke thing happened. I got blown up from behind and ended up missing into the boards and ended up missing 2 months. So in the first 3.5-4 months of the season, I had played, you know, 10 games and had gotten injured in two of those games. So here I was in the back of my head saying, you got to be kidding me, like, not again. It's
crazy.
So, yeah, so obviously, like, the start of the year, I went from almost making the team out of camp to then all of a sudden the injury stuff's, like, coming back, and it's in the back of your head, and it's just kind of like a whirlwind effect. Like I said, like, some, you know, roller coaster of emotions. You kind of get back playing, then you get hurt again, and it's kind of one of those things where it's just you never know when it's going to end. And then, obviously, I got cleared back to playing, and I think in three games I had 3 goals, and there was an injury in Nashville, and I was playing pretty well, and I got called up, and everything just happened so quickly. All of a sudden, I, like, a couple of days before, I wasn't even playing hockey. I was still hurt, and then the next thing you know, I'm going in for warm-ups in the Bridgestone Arena, and the place is just on a Saturday night, and the place is just packed to the brim, and it's so loud, and I'm skating out. And for my first game, and I'm just, like, basically blackout, and I'm like, what? This is, can I swear on this thing? I was like, this is sick.
Love that.
I'm looking up, I'm like, this is fucking ridiculous. Like, I couldn't, I'm just skating through warm-ups and, like, just kind of taking it all in, to be honest with you. Because, like, you had mentioned, it's been not only a long season, but a couple years ago, thinking I was hanging them up type of thing. It's just kind of very, very surreal. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, my parents got and some of my best friends and my brother, you know, flew down for it. So I got to share that experience with them. 8 of my closest friends and family in Nashville. So it was a pretty sick weekend. And then I obviously got to, you know, stay up with the team for a month or so. It was kind of like awkward because there was all-star break and a bye week and stuff. So I went down to Milwaukee, played a couple games, but then when they came back, I went back up to Nashville. So I got to go on, like, you know, a road trip in Vegas for 4 days. I got to go to, yeah, like, that was a sick joke. And then, like, you get to go to, you know, my brother lives in Florida now. So then I got to go down, we played the Panthers and my brother came to that game. So it's just, like, so cool for not only me, but to share the experiences with some of the people that, you know, have been by me through all the ups and downs. It was honestly, it was pretty cool. And it's still something that hasn't quite officially sunk in.
I mean, just talk about Nashville, like, that locker room is just filled with so many studs. Were you not only a little nervous just because you're going into the NHL for the first time, but just how star-studded the locker room was, a little bit, you know, oh my God, a little awestruck?
I wouldn't say I was awestruck. It was kind of more one of those, yeah, to a certain extent. Like, I mean, I met some of the guys and was with them during training camp for, you know, 2 months. So, you know, I just hadn't seen them in a little while, but I was still comfortable with them. It was just kind of more along the lines of, you know, it's a pretty tight-knit group. They've been with each other for a long period of time now. So not that they were awesome to me welcoming me in, but, you know, it's a very veteran group. And it, like I said, they've been with each other for a while. So I think that was kind of like the most intimidating thing about how close they were. And then, you know, it was quickly broken immediately because they welcomed me in with open arms, and they were awesome to me. And, you know, some of the guys in that locker room, especially in the leadership groups, are some of the nicest and genuine people that I think I've ever met. And they are honestly awesome for the game of hockey. Like, you look at Roman Josi and Pecorine and some of those guys, like, you know, the second I got called up, he shoots me a text and stuff along those lines. So, I mean, just stuff like that goes such a long way for somebody who's coming into a new situation like that. So, you know, it was honestly a pretty easy transition. And one of the things that helped me the most was just kind of preparation. One of the assistant coaches, Dan Muse, he's actually was one of the coaches that recruited me and took me on my recruiting visit to Yale back in the day. So You know, right when I got into town, like just going over video and systems and stuff like that, it allowed me to, you know, play so much better than if I wasn't prepared. Just kind of, I've known him from the past, and you know, it was something that, you know, looking back in 2008 or 2009, whenever I was going on that recruiting visit, to say, fast forward 10 years, I'd be playing for you in the NHL for the Nashville Predators. I would have told you to kick rocks, but, you know, it was cool how, like you said, like everything kind of comes full circle at some point.
Yeah, dude, that's unbelievable, man. And then just playing in Nashville, like me and Timmy have talked about this. Like we've kind of talked about what our favorite NHL cities would be. Like if we had to play one place, and both of us agreed, I mean, Tampa's pretty sick. Like obviously there's a lot of character with the original six teams, but dude, playing in Nashville, it must be insane. Like, the city just goes crazy for it, too.
It's ridiculous. Like, honestly, obviously, I've been to Bruins games, and I've been to some other arenas, and obviously, I've never really been on the – I played in Madison Square Garden, but I've never necessarily been on, like, the NHL side of things and see some of the crowds, but the Bridgestone Arena and the fans that they have there, they're absolutely wild, and they support – the Preds so much, and they're just turning into like an absolute hockey hotbed out there. They're just obsessed with the Predators, and that's the one of the main attractions in town. And I remember just like going out to eat on Broadway twice when I was there, and I was there for, like I said, like a short period of time, and I went shopping in one place, and I went to buy a hat for someone, and you know, the person pulled me aside and was like, "You're Colin Blackwell," like blah blah blah, like, and I'm like, "Are you shitting me?"
Dude, that's awesome.
Like, I went to like lunch somewhere on Broadway, and like the people knew who I was, and like it's just honestly, it's just one of the coolest things. Like, obviously, it just like didn't really feel real, you know. And the Predators there, along with like the Titans, and they're just like the main attraction. So obviously you have not only the fans that are ridiculous and wild and they're so loud, but the city of Nashville is just this, you know, crazy town that always there's something going on, and there's just a lot of, you know, fun and excitement, and there's always something to do, and it's got a lot of history, and just you combine both of those, you know, it was pretty cool experience and pretty wild, and not a bad place to play at all, I'll tell you that for free.
No, seriously. Are you a country music fan as well?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, so you're like, you're in heaven.
Oh, I mean, it's like some of the country music, Cole Swindell, people I've like met just from the short period of time that I was there. Like, it's like,
and these people are probably like pumped to meet you because you're playing Predators.
Cole Swindell's crazy. Like, are you Colin Blackwell?
Yeah. You're like, you're Cole Swindell. Like, what the heck? You're both starstruck. That's so cool.
Yeah, just like some of the bars that were there, you just kind of see them. And I never got a chance to see anybody really play, but we had a I'm trying to remember who – I'm going to look it up right now. But we had an opening season party right before they made the opening night roster, and I was at Ryan Johansson's house, which is sick, by the way. And we basically they do this video, and one of the videos is a country music singer. And it's basically like a, you know, what do you call it? Like a pump up video. And he not only is like made the video for the Preds because he's obsessed with the Preds, but then he came to Joey's house and like basically gave us a speech and stuff like that. And I'm trying to remember who it was. It was, I'm looking it up. I can't figure it out, but it wasn't Jason Aldean, but it was somebody big. I'm just blanking off the top of my head.
No, it's
right
okay.
Now, but
that's still unbelievable. Like,
yeah, but just like the country, like I'm a big country music fan, and obviously, like you're just walking down Broadway, and you got Florida Georgia Line House, like Jason Aldean's, Luke Bryan's, just all these cool places that are always playing live music. You land in the airport, and the first thing you hear is live music and country music, and you know, it's really just a unreal atmosphere out there.
Yeah, I was just down there in November. We went to the Pats Titans game. Yeah, we like took an RV down. It was a mess. It was great though. But no, dude, that strip is insane. Like all those places you're listing off, just crazy. And I can't imagine for you, like if you go out at night, I'm sure, you know, half the people have no idea what's going on, but you must drink for free. Like people are like, Colin Blackwell's in the house. Like You own that place, and that's got to be the coolest feeling.
Yeah, it was pretty sick. It was honestly pretty cool. My first stint up there, like the first three games before the All-Star break, we were only in Nashville for a couple days. So I got to, you know, go out to dinner with my friends and family after the game, and that was pretty cool. But I spent a ton of time in Nashville during training camp and stuff like that. I was there for probably, you know, two months to, like, the beginning of the year, and then was down in Milwaukee. And then the month that I was with the Preds, yeah, it's just like I said, like some of the stuff that you see, it's just like so cool, and they're so welcoming to the Predators players, and it was honestly like one of the coolest experiences of my life.
Unreal, man. Timmy, I mean, anything else you want to add? I'm trying to think if I got any more questions for you.
No, I do. I do have a unrelated to hockey question. So we're a big fan of would you rather questions. So my go to would you rather is,
oh boy.
For the rest of your life, would you rather have a popcorn kernel stuck in the back of your throat or Cheetos fingers? And let me preface this by saying that the Cheetos fingers, if you lick it off, it immediately comes back. So it's never gone.
I think I'd rather just wear the Cheetos fingers. I've had popcorn kernels stuck in my throat. It's like the most miserable thing of all time.
Damn.
I love it. That's a great choice.
I would just wear it, and like everybody, like I would just shake everyone's hand as much as possible. And
just troll everybody with Cheetos dust. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Good answer. He's Kudos. A smart guy. He's Kudos. A Harvard guy, Timmy. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, whatever. you can tell me and Muzz disagree on the answer, but fair enough. Hey, if you say Cheetos fingers and you're ready to wear it, then like by all means. Some people are like, yeah, I mean, whatever. I'll just live with it. And I'm like, I don't know if you realize how hard it is. But
have you ever had a popcorn kernel stuck in your throat for more than like an
hour? Exactly.
Okay. Yes, I have. I have. And like, I know it's extremely frustrating and like one of the worst feelings ever, but my opinion is that like you'll get used to it, and I don't think you can like live your life with Cheetos fingers. Like
who was it? Garnsey? Sorry to cut you off. Garnsey brought up if you have Cheetos fingers, you're never going to be able to get a girlfriend, and that was kind of a good point. Like if you have Cheetos fingers, your relationships with people change.
Hey, if you can't get a girlfriend with Cheetos fingers, then you don't have any wheels, Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. I kind of want to see if this is possible now, but yeah.
We'll do an experiment at the bar this summer.
Yeah.
There we go. Perfect. This is Colin Blackwell. He's got Cheetos fingers. Let's see how he does.
But he plays in the NHL. Which matters more to you?
Yeah. Perfect. But other than that, I don't have any. I don't have anything else.
Most no, me neither. I mean, dude, honestly, when. I know we've only known each other a few years and our time together was short, but like there are very few people that I've been more pumped for seeing like you making it to the NHL, getting that call up and getting that first game. And I was just like, I obviously know your story and all that you've been through, and like just being able to play with you in San Jose and like kind of just grinding it out in San Jose. I was just so pumped for you to be able to get that chance, and like onward and upward, man. Hopefully you get some more chances and you keep doing your thing. I know you're wearing an assistant captain in Milwaukee, so obviously I think you're a leader there and all that good stuff, so I'm pumped for you.
No, I appreciate that. That means a lot.
Cool. Well said, Mos. Well said. And just thank you for taking the time to kind of join us and share your story, you know, from the bad of concussions to the good of playing in the NHL in Nashville and you know, how things are going this season. So just good luck the rest of the way, and thanks for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. This was fun. Appreciate it, guys.
All right. Thanks, Absolutely. Blackie. Talk to you later, man.
All right, boys, have a good one.
See ya.
That interview was brought to you by State and Liberty. State and Liberty was founded to develop the perfect dress shirt for athletes. Off-the-rack dress shirts are made for the masses, not for somebody with an athletic build. They provide more room in the upper body with an extremely tailored waist, catering to those with a V-shaped body type. Not only are these shirts stretchy and comfy, but they're crazy low maintenance. The shirts are wrinkle-free, machine washable, and hang dry in about 20 minutes. Guys, I am not kidding. I heard nothing but great stuff about this company, and I finally went in and got myself a dress shirt and a peacoat. They are my two favorite clothing items in my closet right now. If you've never shopped at them before, head over to stateandliberty.com and use our promo code POSTGAMESHAKE for 10% off today. Do it.
That was our interview with Colin Blackwell. We had a great time interviewing him. He's got a great story. He's had some concussion issues, and he just played in his first NHL game, so we're pumped for him. Timmy, I know we had a good time interviewing him. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was awesome. I've heard only great things about him, hockey wise, but also off the ice, how much of a great guy he is, and it was awesome spending some time via phone call and getting to know his story. So I had a blast as well.
Yeah, I think that was something we both just touched on a little bit was. Colin's a really, really great kid off the ice, and that means a lot. And obviously, you want to see kids like that succeed. So he's definitely a guy that you want to follow if you got a chance to listen to the interview. That's why you're here. But definitely follow along with that kid because he's got a great story, and he's somebody that you should be rooting for because he's been through a lot, and he's kind of conquered it, which is pretty cool. And that's what we're looking for. We want people like
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely. Not many people can say that they saw the. You know, the light ending at the end of the tunnel and their career, and then ended up, you know, coming out and succeeding.
Yeah,
and
getting
all the way to the NHL. It's crazy.
I saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and then I left the tunnel and I started my podcast career. So
nice. Yeah. Good segue. That was
yeah.
good.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
And that's pretty much all we have for today. Nothing really major has happened. Bryce Harper signed a big contract. Blah, whatever.
Yeah.
NFL free agency, really nothing's happening. And you know, the NHL's heating up, but nothing too crazy. So that's kind of all we have for you today. Hopefully you enjoy the interview like we just said. And again, thanks for listening. And Apple Podcasts, yeah. Subscribe, review, 5 stars, all that good stuff.
Honestly, tell us how much you love us. We appreciate it. Thank you.
I was wondering if you were going to say it again and how many episodes we're going to say that at the end of it. I think we're on like 4 in a row now.
I know. I can't tell if that's like my thing. Am I going to keep telling everybody that? Or am I going to be like, it's probably not that funny anymore. So it's probably more the latter, but whatever. Just
Was it ever funny? Sorry, that was mean.
Well, if it was never funny, then the bar's really low. So maybe I just keep doing it.
True. Well, being like you're the, hey, lose the review, but how much you genuinely love us. You know, like that, like you're that guy now.
Oh, man, I don't know if I want that tag on me.
I mean, I just put it on you. So I guess next episode, you either got to take it or leave it. Up to you.
Oh, man. All right. I'm going to have to spend the next week figuring that out. But for now, I think we're out of here. We had a great episode. Yeah. Great time interviewing Colin. And we're done with this.
Love it. Love it. All right. Thanks. All right, cool. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Peace.